Welcome to Wellness in Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Martin Mendelson, a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and thought leader. And I'm joined by my very good friend and co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry, both here on our podcast, as well as at our two-day workshop called Lightside Live, which will be held this coming November 1st and 2nd of 2024 in Irvine, California, where you can have the chance to interact with us live and in person. And so go to wellnessindentistry.com and you can find a link for our live course. And today we're going to continue, as always, our discussion of wellness. But today we're going to talk about practice wellness in terms of the referred patient. Why? Because when a patient is referred effectively, it can reduce stress for all parties, increase case acceptance for the patient, and increase wellness for that patient in the delivery of exceptional dental care. So really, Kyle, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for this topic, and I think that you and I have unique views on this topic because of the fact that you have talked to hundreds of practices and probably thousands of doctors after your over a decade of SPEAR education, which does a lot of things with specialists. And then on my side, I did a lot of, and still do a lot of, going around to specialty practices and speaking at their study clubs. And so I hear from both the GPs in the room and the specialists in the room the challenges that they have with this process of referring a patient. And, you know, there's more dentists now that are becoming these super GPs. There's more dentists that are referring less, and there's good and bad things about that, right? But I know there's some doctors that even have a fear or a shame on referring a patient.
Oh, 100%. And what I will tell you is, and you know, thank you for the shout out of our mutual backgrounds. I think there's two parts to it. There's the shame of the referral, and then there's the other part of it, which is the reticence of a specialist to talk to a restorative doctor, referring doctor, about inadequate or incomplete referring processes, methodologies, documentations, the way the patient is sent over from a thought perspective or mental perspective. I think it goes both ways. And so that's why, you know, when you and I were talking about it earlier, we thought this is a really good topic for practice wellness, because at the end of the day, you like to talk about the different elements of wellness within dental practice. So why don't you talk about those for a second?
Yeah. So the three that we try to focus on is practice wellness. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, we run a business, right? Yeah. I mean, we have to make money to pay ourselves, to pay our team, to pay our lab bills, to pay our overhead. That is practice wellness. Now, a lot of that comes out of communication, treatment planning, expectations, boundaries. But then you also have patient wellness, which is very important. That's what most of us learn. Most dentists don't suffer from patient wellness. We're good at doing clinical dentistry.
Yep.
And then you have practitioner wellness, which is really what nobody talks about. And you and I really focus on is how is the dentist, right? Mm-hmm. How is the hygienist? How are the clinicians in the room and how are they doing? So when you take those three, practice wellness, patient wellness, and practitioner wellness, that's when you get true wellness in dentistry, when everybody likes what's happening and everybody's enjoying this profession, because this profession is freaking hard. Yeah. But if you do it well, it can be so rewarding. You can make good money. You can have time off. You can enjoy your relationships.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that I've come to most is the idea around, look, if we're going to take and, or shall we say, make the effort to refer a patient to a colleague that happens to be a specialist, why would we not make an additional effort or set up processes and procedures and protocols to set up that referred patient and process for success? Why would we not do that? And so talk to any specialist. I invite all the restorative dentists on here, whether you refer a lot or a little, whether you have great relationships or not. ask a specialist, particularly the surgical specialist, how often do they get a patient referred in an inadequate manner that puts them in the middle, that makes things uncomfortable, where the patient literally shows up and they say, "Oh, so nice to meet you, Mrs. Jones. So, could you tell me in your own words what brings you here today?" "Well, I don't know. I think they told me I had to have this tooth out on the upper left side and it's the lower right," or something crazy like that, right? And I'm making light of it, but this happens every single day. And so if case acceptance is at the lifeblood of any practice, and we can all accept that case acceptance starts within the office from which the patient was referred, then let's talk about how we're going to do that. I just this past June at the Spear Annual Summit, I gave a whole presentation, almost an hour, on the patient-centric referral. And the idea came to me because I had my fifth hand surgery in May, and I was on this patient portal for my orthopedic surgeon. And I just kind of stopped and I thought to myself, well, this is kind of interesting because they're all part of one medical group. So let's just kind of put that aside for a
Yeah,
second.
so it's a little
But
bit easier,
they're all separate brick and mortar buildings. They're all separate practices. They're not technically connected. And so I thought to myself, what if we could philosophically operate like a medical group as it relates to the experience of the patient? Because I even challenged a group. I said, why would we not even consider perhaps co-branded referral pieces of information, referral sheets, pamphlets, whatever, so that the patient feels taken care of? And there's other things that I'm sure we'll get into here, but that's kind of where it started for me most recently, was from my own personal experience, feeling like I was being taken care of from step one to step two to step three. So.
Yeah. One of the things when I talked about referrals a lot was in the implant workflow. Okay, because a lot of what I was speaking about was implant dentistry. And so I was teaching the referring doctors how to restore implants and take impressions and aesthetics and screw retained versus cement retained, reduce bone loss. And then I was teaching the specialists the surgical side, right? And for me, that was how it works because I was trained on both the surgical and the restorative. The biggest thing that I found was both sides not understanding the other side. And not only that, but communicating that. So, for example, you are a GP, patient comes in and they need a tooth out, and you're not going to do it. Let's say you don't extract teeth, or it looks like a hard one, it's root canal treated, it's a lower anterior, and those can be really challenging if the bone is hard, whatever. So most people do this. I'm going to send you to Dr. Smith. He or she is going to take the tooth out, and eventually they're going to place an implant. And then they'll send you back here, and I'll put the crown on top of it, right? And then the patient goes to Dr. Smith and he or she says, "I'm going to take the tooth out and then I need to do what's called a bone graft." And not only that, but your tissue is not the correct kind of tissue there. You've had some recession. We're going to do a tissue graft as well. And the patient goes, "I'm getting upsold right now. Something, wait, they just told me I'm taking the tooth out. And now, oh, this surgeon here, she just wants to, buy another boat or send their other kid to college on my dime." And think about how different this would be, again, going back to expectations and communication, like I always talk about, if the conversation was different. If you said, "Ms. Jones, you need to have this tooth out. That's best done in our practice. We like to refer those to Dr. Smith here. She's awesome." Now, they're going to take that tooth out. There may be some other procedures they have to do, such as bone grafting, tissue grafting. They may have to do something called a sinus lift. Sometimes they even place the implant the same day. I'm not really sure. They will tell you what to do, but just know that whatever Dr. Smith recommends, I completely have full trust in.
Absolutely.
Think of how that changes the expectation.
It's so simple, and some might argue, well, it's not that easy, but I would say, yeah, it kind of is, because what you just did was set expectations without a very significant amount of detail, right? And so, what would it be like, as an example, as kind of a take-home example, what would it be like if once a year you got together with the specialists that you refer to most? You buy lunch, they buy lunch, who cares? And you bring the teams together and you go, okay, we have four procedures that we most commonly refer back and forth to each other. Let's talk about how we would like each party to talk about the other's processes and what they're going to do so that we can align on similar talk tracks. Now, would I recommend you like write it all out so that the teams of the respective offices could take it home and have it for reference? Of course. But this isn't about scripting. This is about information. This is about predictability. This is about continuity so that people understand where they're coming from so that they can do exactly what you just did seamlessly and in their own way, right?
And I think the problem that most not just GPs, I think the problem that dentists have, whether they're a general practitioner or a specialist, is they say, well, I don't do that, so I don't need to know about it. And I disagree. You
Agreed.
don't need to know how to do it, but you need to know what is incorporated with that.
Absolutely.
It's like when you send someone for wisdom teeth extraction, let's say to an oral surgeon. You would say, I'm going to send you to have these wisdom teeth removed. He or she's going to tell you what all needs to be done. Most patients are under general anesthesia. They may have other options at their practice, but most patients like to go to sleep for this. It's a little more comfortable. You say, my kids went to sleep for it, or I did when I had mine out, or Sarah sitting next to me, she had Sarah, what'd you do? Oh yeah, she went to sleep for that too. Little things like that. Again, you don't need to know how to do the hockey stick incision and reflect the flap and, cut the tooth in half. You don't need to know how to do that. But you need to know enough to set the expectation, communicate it with the patient, and let them feel taken care of. And also, this may be a next topic. You know what? I'm going to save that. I'm going to save that. Sorry. Go
Well,
ahead.
you just made me think of something that I never thought of before, because I agree with you wholeheartedly about the I don't need to know that argument. And think about if we use that same argument with our teams, or what if our team said that to us? Well, I'm not the one physically prepping the tooth, so I don't need to know how to do that. Like, we would be like, no. You need to understand the process. So if the patient asks you a question, you can at least answer it maybe part way or what's appropriate, et cetera. So think about the kind of a heavy word, but the hypocrisy of that, right? Where the teams do need to understand. I mean, not to get too deep into study clubs, but that's some of my frustration with study clubs, with clinicians, where they go to a study club meeting and they learn about this type of procedure, or they learn nuances of this kind of procedure, and they go back and they don't talk to their team about it. Do I expect you to talk to your team about the nitty-gritty clinical processes, procedures, and things you would consider? No, I don't. But I do expect you to go back and say, this is what we learned. We've referred these in the past. I realize this would improve the referral process. What do you say, Susie? What do you say, Johnny? Like, that's a personal bias. It drives me crazy. But it's the same kind of argument where you do need to understand, you do need to sit in, wear the other person's shoes at least a little bit to be able to best communicate to the patient, because we don't want that patient to be frustrated, whether it's going to or coming back from the specialist office. Both are
Well,
important.
it's similar to, this Sunday I'm doing a lecture with Dr. Ben Talley, who is a plastic surgeon friend of mine. Now, we do a lot of cases together at our practice and his practice where someone's having a lip lift and then they're coming to us and having veneers, or they're having orthodontic surgery, then they're having rhinoplasty. Now, we don't know how to do rhinoplasty. We don't know how to do lip lifts. We don't know how to do facelifts. However, we know enough of the procedure to set the expectation, to know who does what first. And similarly, Dr. Talley has been so great in learning dental treatment planning and knowing what vertical dimension is and knowing what the ideal tooth show should be at rest and little things like this. Again, he doesn't know how to prep veneers and that kind of stuff, but he knows enough to talk to his patients about it and say, I'm going to do this lip lift, but if I do that, you may show too much tooth, and your teeth are kind of wide, so we may have to reshape those. And so it's the same thing. We don't know how to do each other's procedures, but we know enough to inform the patient, set the expectation. And
Absolutely.
then also the last bit that I wanted to add was talk really well about that specialist or that GP. Because if you're referring one of your patients, again, that can be on either side, specialist or GP, you have trust in this person. This is generally someone you like, someone you respect, someone you would, spend time with, maybe even a good friend. You should communicate that because
Absolutely.
this goes both ways. I mean, some of the most successful specialists that I know are so good at this. And they're not saying it like to blow smoke up people's asses. They're saying
No.
it because they truly mean it. I will have specialists that will come back to my practice after doing something with a surgical specialist or endo, and they'll come back and say, "Oh, Dr. So and so, he just talked so much about you. I mean, he loves you and Dr. Najad. He was telling us how you guys are like the leaders in this area." And that is such a practice builder.
Oh my gosh. I saw this real time in front of me. I visited a practice and my dear friend David, who's a hygienist, function he and the other assistants in the practice were all hygienists. This was a really
Oh,
high-end
interesting.
surgical perio practice. And I witnessed this. He brought the patient back and said, "Mrs. Jones, it's so great to see you. Dr. So-and-so is going to be in a minute. Dr. So-and-so and Dr. Jones have been friends for years. They go to study clubs together. They have the most respect for each other." It was a masterclass, and it wasn't fluff. There was a lot of specifics that David shared with this patient. And I thought, that's how this should be done. I was just blown away by the professionalism, by the comprehensiveness. And this was standard practice in this practice. That was just, the way they did things. It was absolutely fantastic.
And think of how the patient feels, right? Because, I recently had some oral surgery done. I'm still in ortho. I have stuff that my partner Matt is doing on me, and I'm working with amazing specialists. I picked all these people. They all work together normally too. They do a lot of cases together, but I handpicked. It's not like no one referred me to the orthodontist. I referred myself, right? And no one referred me to this oral surgeon. I referred myself. But even when I'm in there, they say, "Oh my gosh, yeah, like we're so lucky to have you work with Dr. Yoon. Like she's amazing. Her ortho is the best, and she's an amazing researcher. And I mean, you're in such great hands." And it's like when I refer people now, because I have a lot of friends that will just, call me. They're not even my patients, right? They'll call me and say, "Hey, I'm thinking about getting ortho, or I need jaw. Someone told me I need jaw surgery. Like, who'd you recommend? Or my kid needs to get their wisdom teeth out. Who'd you recommend?" And when I refer someone, it's someone that I really trust and that I admire.
Oh,
And I tell them,
absolutely.
I say, "You're going to Dr. X. Trust whatever she says. I mean, she is really the expert in this area." And I hand it off. And so many times they come back and thank me for the referral. And this can happen in your practice if you're a GP, is that
Well,
your patients, even though they're going through something that may be scary, may be different, may be expensive, may be time consuming, they can come back to you and say, "Wow, Dr. Smith was amazing. Their practice took such good care of me. Thank you so much for sending me there." It's like, wow,
Absolutely.
you get to work with them? That's so cool.
So my buddy Bjorn, who I see personally as a patient, who get this, who told me recently, I've referred upwards of 60 patients to him.
Oh my gosh.
And so what you said is exactly what I do. Like people are like, do you have a dentist? Do you have a dentist you can recommend? And you know how it is. I'd say, would you agree with this? About 50% of the time, they're asking for a referral because something didn't go well previously. And so what I typically say is, this is my dentist. I think that he's exceptional. He is a really great communicator. And here's the one thing I promise you, whatever he shares with you that's needed is not only necessary, but it's in his best clinical judgment to get you to where you need to be oral health wise. That's literally what I say every single time. And I've had so many people come back to me and say, you know, that was an amazing experience. It was, I had never heard this before, and it was really kind of cool. And we all know what would happen had the expectation not been set that way for some. Yes. For some, they'd
for
be
some,
like,
yeah.
I never heard that before. He's just trying to buy another car. It's like,
right.
No, he's sharing with you what needs to be done. But and I have another tip. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves if you kind of had a next thought in mind. But
no, I think that's, I finished my thought.
Yeah. So one of the things that I proposed at this presentation I did at Spear for the patient-centric referral is, how do you know how you're doing from a referral process perspective? When I say, how do you know how you're doing? I mean, case acceptance. So what would it be like to talk to one of your specialists and say, how are my referred cases from a case acceptance perspective versus the average cases of that case type that are referred to your practice? And the specialist might go, well, what do you mean? Well, pretty simple. Like, if I refer to you a single implant, what percentage of my patients say yes versus the average of everybody else? Now, depending on the specialist, some are really into that kind of data mining, some are not. But it will create a very interesting and open, transparent conversation, because what you're looking to do is say, okay, so I'm at 50% and the average is at 65%. What is it that I do or I don't do versus some of the other practices that have a higher case acceptance percentage that we could start implementing? Like, what a powerful conversation that would be, right?
Yeah, well, you're coming with vulnerability.
Yep.
I think is what makes that so powerful, is you're coming saying, it's implied, you didn't necessarily say it, but it's implied, tell me what I can do better.
Yeah, 100%.
How can I serve my patients better? How can I help you and your business better and your practice better?
Yep.
And let's work together.
Absolutely.
Because I know from a specialist standpoint, specialists complain about GPs just like GPs complain about specialists. They say, you know, they only send me the hard ones, or they only send me the asshole patients, or every time this GP sends something over, they never want to do it. They always complain about the price. And, you know, they know if they have 20 people that refer to them, who are their top referrals?
Yeah.
Not only in volume, but in how much they like the patients, in how the patients show up on time, how they respect the team members. And if you can be very open, because you may have a big blind spot, you may think, I'm sending all these people over and all my patients are so awesome and they always pay me.
Yep.
But maybe it's a different type of practice. Maybe the front office is a different type of personality. Maybe the parking is different. There's weird things that can set people off.
Yeah.
And asking how you're doing is a great way. And you've talked about that many times.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so overlooked, and it's just not a common discussion for many. You know, what can I do better in the way I refer? Now some do ask that, but my curiosity would be, to what level of detail do you talk about it? In other words, there's multiple aspects to the referred case. It's, MT as Manji used to talk about mind ready versus practice ready. And so does the patient walk in mind ready to know you're the bee's knees specialist in our community, and whatever you say is, I know, will be in my best interest, and I'm ready, willing, and able to hear what you have to say. That's thought ready.
Okay, let me just interrupt you there. Should that idea of setting the specialist up as the guy or gal in the area, should that come from the referral?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the practice ready element is the documentation, the photography if applicable, the you know, radiographic images if applicable, whatever else you got, CT, whatever. Is that, are those materials sent, period? And are they sent comprehensively? Are they sent with quality? I mean, I frankly talk about radiographs. Sometimes the radiographs sent are irrelevant because they don't show the apex or their cone cut, whatever. So those can be very, as you put it, vulnerable discussions to have, but they're also very necessary, because if we're looking to improve, the only way we're going to improve is by understanding where we are today, where we want to go, and then therefore bridge the gap between the two. End of story.
Where do you think, because I think you're really, you have a lot of knowledge on this topic. Where do you think the most stress comes from? And let's talk about both sides. So let's first talk about GPs. Where does the most stress come from a GP making a referral?
I think part of it is a mindset thing, like you alluded to earlier. Like there's this unspoken hierarchy between GP and specialist. So I think the stress can be real or imagined. What do I mean by that? You know, they know they're referring the patient to a specialist. They know it's going to be a higher dollar procedure. They know that, you know, they're going to hit their max before they make it through the parking lot. And so I think there's certain levels of stressors there. And because of what you shared earlier about that feeling of reticence to say something, part of it can be, well, I hope this is good enough to refer over, right? And so what I've seen sometimes is an inclination to send over less and just, I'll let you handle it because I may not be sending everything, so I'm not going to send anything and be judged like we were, unfortunately, in dental school. On the materials that I send over. So that's the GP side. I can tell you on the special side, without hesitation, one of the biggest frustrations and most uncomfortable moments is when a patient is referred for a singular issue and there's all kinds of other stuff going on. The specialist, everyone I believe would agree, has an obligation primarily to the patient. So patients referred for, you know, removal of a root tip on 30 and an implant, a single implant placed, and everything else is a train wreck. And at the very least, what we need to do as we refer it over is to say, I understand there's a lot of other issues going on. They're in a, you know, we're in the treatment planning process, something, because otherwise, what would you do if you were in that specialist's shoes? You would have to inform the patient to some degree. Because of other factors, you may even disagree with the need for that single implant to be placed. And then therefore now it's you really open up a can of worms because the patient's like, well, they told me this, now you're telling me that, and blah, 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 blah. That's the biggest thing. I think it's, I would couch it the error of omission. Is one of the things that causes the biggest stress for specialists that I've heard over and over and over again.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It
And
puts them in such a horrible position. Horrible position.
specialists have a hard time because they are dependent on referral. They're referral-based systems. And so biting the hand that feeds is challenging. And so I think a lot of the onus should be on the GP to bring this up. And say, tell me how I'm doing. How can I do better? And I know that's hard because a lot of GPs are nervous around specialists. They're like, oh my gosh, here she's the oral surgeon, or here she's the periodontal endo or pedo, whatever. Like, they're this, oh my gosh, I'm just a GP. What do I know? But I mean, you have the power. The GP has the power in this relationship. They are dependent on our referrals. And you can have a fantastic referral system if you have that open communication. And what's interesting is the situation that you were just saying, where a patient is referred and they have a bunch of other crap going on in their mouth, that can be so easily explained, just how you did it, by setting the expectation.
Oh,
By
100%.
just saying, hey, this patient was in pain. We haven't even done full treatment planning on her. We're doing stage one emergency kind of treatment. Just know that there's going to be other teeth that are probably going to need to come out, but he or she just wants to do this one. And we're going to do full treatment planning after that. How easy is that? Then the specialist goes, oh, okay. They just want this tooth out.
And
Easy. Yeah.
they can turn to the patient and say, I know you're working through a broader plan with
Yes.
your now I do feel the need to say the following, which is this. Everything I just shared 100% occurs. It's a real thing. There are also specialists that simply prefer to take the quarterback position and just deal with it and treatment plan it. And they've set up that relationship with the people that refer to them. So that exists. as does the other. However, if we're not having the conversation around expectations to begin with, how are we going to know which it is to forge the most positive, productive, and predictable referral relationship for the betterment of our patients? So it's not that there are specialists out there that don't want a treatment plan. In some cases, it's the antithesis of that. But if we're not asking the question, then we're not even going to know to begin with.
Yeah, well, I've seen this on the lab side too. And you and I have both worked in labs for a long time, is that I will get a call from the surgeon on a case because the GP will say, well, I'll do whatever Dr. Smith says to do on this. And I'm thinking, they're the ones placing the implants. You tell them where the teeth are going to go, and they place the implants based on where the teeth are going to go, not vice versa. And I think the problem is that, especially in the implant world, and maybe I'm biased, most general dentists have implants just as like an adjunct thing that they do. And implants is really an entire specialty in my experience. Like, teeth and implants are totally different. And so you have doctors that do crowns and fillings, and they may even do full mouth rehabs on teeth, but on implants, they don't do it that often. And so they just refer to whatever the specialist says. And sometimes you have those relationships, like you said, where we know whatever happens, the specialist kind of tells me what to do and I'll do that. But I really think that from a restorative standpoint, it benefits everybody. If you are a GP or if you're a restorative doctor, that you know how to handle this. And then you communicate with the specialist and say, I want to put the tooth here. I want the transition line to be here. Can you place the implants higher? Where's the nose? Where's the sinuses? Do we have to do sinus lifts? Do we have to lateralize the nerve? Tell me more. But this is where I need the teeth in the face.
And I think too, if we take a step back and always use the patient's best interest as our North Star, that will often answer the question of what really should I do? And, you know, I use the loved one test. If this was your loved one, what would you do? If this was your loved one, would you leave it to chance or leave it in their shoes or have questions, et cetera? And if we're truly there as servants of our patients, then we need to take a step back and think about, how am I referring? Is it in their best interest? Is it encouraging or discouraging case acceptance for the patient to get the best care that they possibly can? Because perception is reality. So if we are going out of our way to not establish the right expectation, then we're actually working against ourselves from a case acceptance perspective.
So what other tips do you have for this referral process?
So
we've talked about, let's kind of review what we've talked about. We've talked about setting an expectation. We've talked about letting the patient know that other procedures may need to happen. Even overestimating timeline. Now, sometimes they may ask you cost. That may be a conversation that you may want to talk about or not talk about, depending on what your specialist wants. Because, for example, you're sending a patient over for an implant. They may say, well, oh, you're sending me to the specialist. How much is this going to cost, doc? Now, you may say, you know, I'm not that sure. It depends on this, this, and this. And but just know that whatever Dr. Smith recommends, that he or she really is doing what's in your best interest. Or you may want to say, if you know their fees and if your specialist is okay with that, you know, an implant ranges in their practice between 2,000 and 4,000, depending on what you need to do. There may be some adjunct procedures. The healing time's usually between 3 and 9 months, depending on this. So really, it all comes down to expectations for me. But what have we reviewed anything else?
So I want to go back to this idea of yearly or twice a year meetings with each of the teams. Because the thing you were just talking about with fees, I think, is a really important point relative to, there is a maximum fee that could be for an individual implant. There just is. And so if we're meeting once a year or twice a year, and we understand what that maximum is, the example verbiage that you just gave becomes even more powerful. And so it's like, well, you know, Mrs. Jones, there's various elements that go into implant placement. We may need to augment the bone. We may need to augment the tissue. And depending on the situation and Dr. Jones's surgical opinion, because they're the best in the business, it will be anywhere between X and the most case Y. And think about it. If you under promise and over deliver, and you say the maximum fee is going to be, I don't know, $5,000, and it turns out to be $3,500, you're both heroes, right? Yeah. So, but you're not going to know that unless you're talking on a regular basis. Now, I do understand and respect there are clinicians that don't want the other clinician to talk about fees. That's a personal choice.
Yep.
But what I'm saying is, if this is okay with you, there are ways to do it that are consistent with the fee schedules in your offices without quoting an exact fee and setting up the discussion for success. So that yearly meeting should be comprised of, you know, are we going to talk fees or not? Let me rephrase. Are we going to talk fee ranges or not? Mm-hmm. What are those fee ranges? What are the fees for certain procedures that we shouldn't go near because there's mm-hmm. too many variables
yeah.
that exists as well? How would each office like the respective office to talk about what's going to happen when it goes to the surgeon, when it comes back, when it goes to the ortho, when it comes back? What are the basics of what we need to say? How are we doing, like, state of the union from a documentation perspective? Whether that has to do with written documentation, imagery, et cetera, what could be better? What do we not need to send? Because the surgeon's going to say, I'm going to take my own CT. You don't need to send me anything.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Also expectations relative to the consultation process, how patients are appointed, you know, how long typically it takes to get in. And then I would also have the discussion around how do we work together from the standpoint of emergencies, right?
I was just thinking that when you're talking about how long mm-hmm. it takes to get in, because yeah. I have endo friends, and I think we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I have endo friends that literally can have their best days
yeah.
out of the week start yeah. out with zero patients yeah. on yeah. on the chart yeah. or absolutely. on their schedule.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was practicing more, we have an endodontist down the hall, just like three doors mm-hmm. down the hall. And mm-hmm. I'd see him in the morning at 7 a.m. and say, oh, hey, Yuri, how's your, you busy today? And some mm-hmm. days be like, oh yeah, you know, I've got 10 patients on. And
yeah.
someday he'd be like, nope, zero.
Yeah.
And then I'd see him, you know, later when we're all leaving and say, oh, how'd it turn out? He's like, we had like 30 people come in today, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And so emergencies are definitely something that you should talk to your specialist about and ask how you'd like them to be treated.
Yeah.
And I think establishing what an emergency is too mm-hmm. is very important, right?
Absolutely.
Emergency is not because the patient wants to get it done right then. No, an emergency is really an emergency. There's pain, blood, swelling.
Yep.
You know, it could get worse very quickly, right? Yep. That kind of stuff is a true yeah. emergency. And I think also too, setting the expectation with the patient before you, whether you're going to call or not. I think yeah. in emergencies at our practice, most time we call because mm-hmm. like the patient's sitting in a chair and yeah. we will call and say,
yeah.
hey, we talked to Dr. X and yeah. they said they can see you tomorrow morning, or they said they can go run over there right now.
Absolutely.
But also before you call, you say, hey, we're going to call, try to get you in.
Yep.
Just know sometimes they're full now. And you may even say, we do have a few specialists that we work with, mm-hmm. especially when there's emergencies. So we're going to try to call,
yeah.
see if we can get you in, but
yeah.
you may have to wait 2 days.
Yeah. And I don't want to open up Pandora's box, but there's all kinds of other things that can be done too from the specialist side. I mean, Google phone numbers are easy to get these days. And many cell phones, you could put multiple numbers on any one phone. And so what would it be like if you took a look at, you know, your top 10 or 20 referring offices, you had a discussion around expectations, around what an emergency is. And it's like, here's the bat phone when you need us. And so then the specialist team knows if that bat phone rings, that's important. Now, mm-hmm. If there are abuses to the bat phone line, we can talk about crucial conversations another time. But, let's not play to the minority. Let's play to the majority and putting the patients first, because we can address those as we need to. Let's not create a reality based on exception. Let's create a reality based on the rule, right?
Yeah,
So.
and the last thing I want to talk about as we're winding up here that I mentioned a little bit, but has been brought up to me is GPs having shame about referring a patient. So I think, I can't remember if you were on this. It was like a Lightside Live Facebook Live or something
It rings a
with my
bell.
members, or
It rings a bell.
maybe it was Lightside Club, the mastermind. But anyway, someone had brought up that they have shame about referring a patient. So let's say patient comes in, they've got caries. You test the tooth is testing necrotic or irreversible pulpitis, and you don't do endo, or you don't do molar endo, or it looks like it's a calcified canal or something like this. And you say, Mrs. Jones, it looks like you may need a root canal on this. I'm going to send you to Dr. Smith, and he or she's going to take a look and see what's possible. And they say, well, can't you just do it? Oh, I just love you. Like, Dr. Mendelsohn, I just want to stay with you. I've been here 20 years. Come on, can't you just do it? And what I have been communicated to is that there are many dentists, especially young doctors, that feel like they're letting the patient down, or that they are a loser for not knowing how to do every specialty in dentistry. Talk to me about that.
So what just came to my mind is something a therapist once said to me, which is guilt is a self-imposed emotion. And so when it comes to this, if you're sitting there thinking to yourself from a clinical perspective, I need to send this to X specialist, there's a reason. And you're doing it in that patient's best interest. And there's lots of examples in our world of when other people handle certain other elements of medical procedures. And so, I think the coach in me would, acknowledge, validate, ask an open-ended question. It's like, look, Mrs. Jones, it makes total sense that you would like to stay here. We love treating you. We have a great relationship with you. And so it makes perfect sense that you would ask that, right? It's my clinical belief as your dentist that this specialty procedure is best placed in the hands of an expert that does this all day long. Really, what is it about being referred outside the office other than our great relationship that's really bothering you today? I think that's what I would do. Now, some people are going to go right back and be circular and be like, well, I just like you, blah, 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 blah. But I'll say reference thought number one, which is you've already decided it's in their best interest. But many other people will be like, well, I'm not sure how much it's going to cost, or I'm not sure where it is. And 9 times out of 10, it's some other reason that you can address, particularly if you've had those yearly or twice a year meetings with your specialist, so you really know, how they tick from an informational perspective.
And from a shame standpoint, what advice can you give to the dentists that do have shame for that? And it
There
comes out of, and sorry to interrupt you, it comes, I asked you a question, but then I just keep talking. It's it comes out of a good place. It comes out of the feeling that we want to help our patients.
I
This
will
is where a lot
say,
of us get in trouble too, right? Like, you have, so I'm going to see how many times I can interrupt you right now. We get in trouble many times as dentists because a patient comes to us and a case may be above our pay grade, but we really want to help them. And so maybe we do it cheaper, we do it faster, we don't use the rubber dam, or we don't do guided surgery or something. It comes out of a good place, but it still gets us in trouble.
I will say to you that the shame, in my humble opinion, is 1,000,000% analogous to the shame of asking for help for your mental health. There is strength in asking for help. There is weakness in continuing to just do what it is you do and going on your way without asking for help. There is strength in saying, this is in your best interest. That individual is the best person to do it. And I have no problem looking you in the face and saying, you know what, if you were my loved one, this is where I would send you. And so it's a process.
That comes down to expectation, or sorry, it comes down to boundaries to me. I think this is setting a boundary with a patient that many of us have a hard time with. That the boundary is, I will do anything in my power to help you with this. And if I'm the right one to do it, yes, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to try to do it well. And I'm going to try to do it, you know, I'm going to try to do it at a fee that may work for you, but it may not. And however, this is not something I do.
Yeah,
You know,
100%, 100%.
like for me, I mean, I don't know, I maybe did five root canals outside of dental school. And then I just realized I don't really enjoy this. I'm not very good at it. I'm not making money at it. Like it took me way too long. Even when I did it, it was like, meh. And so I just decided I'm not going to do root canals. And so for me, it was much easier because I had made that boundary with myself already.
Totally.
I think having something specific isn't, it gives you, it allows you to make that boundary. So let's keep going on this example. I don't do endo. Or let's say I don't do molar endo. Or let's say I don't do multi-canal endo. Or I don't do endo on teeth that don't have, like for on children, for example, that don't have a, you know, a finalized apex. And I think when you can make those defined decisions, it allows you to have the boundary better. It's just like in my complication compliance method, one of the things I talk about is you need to define a warranty policy so that you can enforce it.
Yeah,
It's the
totally.
same thing. If you haven't defined it, then you can't enforce it.
Yep, totally. Totally, totally.
All right. Well, this was a great discussion.
Yes.
Martin, thanks for sharing your knowledge on this. You have so much experience on this with being with Spear for a decade plus and talking with thousands and thousands of specialists. So thank you for sharing that. And for those of you that are listening, if you haven't written us a five-star review, if you think we're five stars, we would really, really appreciate that. And if you think this could help a colleague or a friend, send it to them. I know when friends send me podcasts, I listen to them and put them at the top of my list. And lastly, if you haven't signed up for Lightside Live, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to the links page and click on Lightside Live. We'd love to see you there November 1st and 2nd in Irvine, California, when it's probably cold where you live, but it's not cold where we're having the course. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness in Dentistry.
Take care. Bye-bye.